Welcome to episode 206 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. This show was recorded, well, throughout the summer 2013, but released the week of September 2nd, 2013. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Jensen USA, where you'll find a fantastic selection of complete bikes, components, accessories, apparel, nutrition, and more, all at phenomenal prices with unparalleled customer service. When you need anything for cycling, simply go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And by Fazari Performance Bicycles, where they design and build high-performance road and mountain bikes using the most advanced design techniques, materials, and components. And they sell it all manufacturer direct for huge savings and provide you with a custom fit to ensure comfort, performance, and satisfaction. Go to Fezzari.com, that's F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I.com, to learn more. Now, sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. This one's going to be all about product, as will the next. In this episode of the Fredcast, I have a number of interviews that I've recorded over the summer with a variety of different manufacturers for products that you will be seeing on your store shelves very, very shortly. And I wanted to bring those to you in advance of the 2013 Interbike. And by the way, I'm curious how many of you have gotten invites from your local bike shop to attend Interbike this year. Let me know. Send me an email. Love to know whether or not you're going. And if you are, you'll be able to find me, as always, at the Media Center, where we will be, where I will be hosting Interbike TV, as always, hosting the Good Morning Interbike show. And we'll also do a couple of live episodes of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. Love Interbike, really looking forward to it. And speaking of Interbike and bike shops, we need to start the show by thanking our main show sponsor, and that's Jensen USA at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Now, Jensen's got a great sale going on right now, up to 40% off 2013 GT bikes. So if you've been looking for a GT road bike or a GT mountain bike, head on over to jensenusa.com/thefredcast, and now is the time to pick one up. And of course, I mentioned Fazari and Interbike in the same breath because I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to doing an interview on video and audio, which I'll bring to you here on the show, with the founder of Jensen USA. He's got a great story about how he started the company, and I'm really looking forward to bringing that to you. But of course, Jensen USA, you know, is the place where you can really satisfy all of the needs for everything that you need for cycling, whether it's complete bikes or nutrition, apparel, components, you name it, they've got it at phenomenal prices. And as I've told you for a long time, with unparalleled customer service. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Check them out. Once you become a customer, you'll be a customer for life. Got to thank Jensen USA, as always, for their support of the Fredcast. And thank you for supporting Jensen. Okay, well, as I said at the top of the show, this show is going to be all about product, as will the next. This show is interviews. The next show is product reviews, a couple of products and a book as well that I've been testing out over the summer, well, both before the shoulder surgery and some of them after as well, not out on the road because I listen to the doctor and the physical therapist. But several products that I've been testing, and that's coming up in the next episode of the Fredcast. But this show is all about interviews. I've got some interviews from Press Camp, some interviews from Dealer Camp. I know you're going to find them interesting, so let's get right into them. Well, let's get right into it with a company that I was just blown away by at Press Camp. I think you're all familiar with British cyclist Chris Boardman. Chris Boardman is a gold medal, an Olympic gold medal winner, a holder of the hour record, and someone who, well, I mean, one of his nicknames is the professor. And when you start to peel away the layers of the onion when it comes to Chris Boardman and his company, what you find is a brand that didn't just take the name of a racer and slap it on the side of an open mold bicycle frame. No, this is somebody who really understands bicycle technology and how to design bicycles to ensure performance, specific performance for specific needs. So I really got a lot out of my time with them at Press Camp, and I think you will also get a lot out of the interview. So here's my interview from Press Camp earlier this summer with Boardman Bikes. You ever wonder what happens to a professional cyclist when he retires from racing? I do. And there's one professional cyclist that I am not concerned about after learning about his bicycle line. I'm talking to Andy from Boardman. Tell everybody, they should know, but if they don't know about Chris, tell them a little bit of Chris's history.
Chris Boardman, he was a professional road cyclist and track cyclist for many years. And he raced from 1992, from his Olympic success in Barcelona in the pursuit, all the way through to his multiple successes in the Tour de France, wearing the yellow jersey, prologue wins. In fact, he still holds the record for the fastest ever prologue in the Tour de France. I think Cancellara is still chipping away at that, but with no prologue this year in the Tour, I think he's safe for another year. But yeah, no, so yeah, he's throughout his whole pro career, he was known as a professor. And I mean, if you look at images of Chris during his pro career and you analyse the bikes he was riding, the bikes were always a little bit different to what he should have been riding. He was always very much around his marginal gains, getting as much out of his body as possible, but also out of the product that he was riding as possible as well.
So sort of that dirty little secret, it may have had a name on it, but it might have been a little bit different than what he could have gotten from the manufacturer.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that. Not specifically, I don't want to get anyone into any trouble, but I just know that Chris was, whilst he was getting as much out of his body as possible, he was certainly looking at the bikes and the product he was racing on and riding with and making sure he got those gains out of the product as well.
But a little bit more than other racers, in that Chris has been involved in bike design and thinking about bike design for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, after his pro career, Chris didn't just sort of sit back and that was it. He was very much back in the thick of it. He went straight out and he was the R&D director at British Cycling for two Olympic cycles. And he was fundamental to the product that the team rode in both in Beijing, which I think was in any Olympic discipline, probably Team GB's most successful Olympics. And then obviously through London last year as well in the Olympics in London. Yeah, he was R&D director there, so fundamental to the product design of the bikes and the kit that the team were riding. So, yeah.
And so, again, I'm going to use this phrase, unlike some brands where I walk into the suites and maybe sometimes that's the same bike just with different decals that I've seen from an open mold. This is not a brand of open mold bikes.
Yeah, from the very... when we first started with the Boardman bike brand in the UK, Chris was very much around, this is not a badging job. He wouldn't have even done that. He wouldn't even entertain the prospect of that. This is very much around him putting his experience, knowledge, and what he knows and what he's done in the past, and also looking to the future and looking at where he can push bike design and technology and putting it into a range of product. It's his name on a down tube. He's got one chance of doing this, and he wants to do it right.
And so when we look at the bikes, just what are the different bikes in the range? Then we'll talk a little bit about the road bike specifically.
Yeah, I mean, for the North American market, we are bringing in three different frame platforms. We're bringing in an Air TT frame platform, which is exactly the same frame as Pete Jacobs won the Hawaii Ironman on. We're bringing the Air road platform as well, which is the same frame that the Brownlees won the Olympics on. And we're bringing our SLR. Superlight racing platform in as well.
So a TT bike, a couple of road bikes. What are some of the innovations, some of the differences between a Boardman road bike, for instance, and some of the competitors?
Okay, well, with our Boardman road bike, what we've done is we've identified the fact that we've not gone down the middle of the road kind of route to the product. We've very much looked at the consumer and look at what the consumer needs, and so therefore we've gone down the route of having two specific types of bike. We've chosen both the Aero road platform and also a super light platform. So for the consumer who wants the ultimate in terms of performance and speed, and we've very much got the Aero road platform, which takes all of Chris's learnings on aerodynamics, and also from being a pro road rider himself as well, from handling and geometry, and put it into a road package. And we've also gone down the Superlight racing platform as well, which gives the rider a frame weight, a sub 900 gram raw frame weight, with a geometry which is very stable and gives them a very stiff, very light, Very nice handling bike, but without the but in much more of a traditional kind of package.
I just because even though I don't have a lot of listeners who are time trial riders, the bike is just, sorry to use this phrase, it's just too attractive not to discuss. Tell us about some of the innovations in that bike.
On the TT bike. Okay, well, the TT bike, the key innovations on that bike is, yet one is the tube profiles themselves. The tube profiles themselves have been very carefully designed, utilizing CFD analysis, wind tunnels, etc., and have been designed around real world conditions. So it's not just about achieving a really good result in a head-on in a wind tunnel. It's about real world riding conditions. So that's about crosswinds, and designing the bike around up to 20 degrees of yaw, for example, means that the bike performs as well in crosswinds as it does in headwinds. And it's really around designing a bike which Pete Jacobs could, we could help Pete Jacobs on his way to his Ironman success. So it's a bike that's not just aerodynamic, but it handles really well. So it's a really fast bike. Also weight-wise, we've kept the weight to a minimum as well. Because obviously weight is always an issue. As soon as the road goes up, then weight becomes an issue. So yeah, it was, and also one of the key, I guess, innovations on our bike is the fact that the front brake is hidden inside the fork, and we've done that because our CFD analysis shows us, and you can actually see, we actually demonstrate this on our website, that you can, if you hide the brake inside the fork, there's a tangible benefit to doing that. You reduce the drag significantly off the front end of the bike. It's not just about hiding the brake behind the fork, you've got to actually enclose it within the fork. So yeah, that's a real innovation for our bike.
Now, on the roadside, who do you see as, at least here in the North American market, as your target audience? What kind of a rider are you targeting these bikes at?
Okay, well, we're targeting these bikes at the kind of rider who appreciates performance, and they appreciate the fact that that you can do things with the product that do enhance the performance of the bike. So with our Aero road bike, for example, we're looking for the kind of rider who knows that aerodynamics is a benefit, but we do aerodynamics in a way in which we don't compromise other elements of the ride. So yeah,
give me an example of that, because Aero road has sort of become this new category in the States in the last few years, and a lot of brands have come out with their own version of Aero road. What makes yours really stand out?
Well, from a tube profile perspective, we take the same learning as we did on our TT bike, and we adapt it into our Aero road bike. But we also do that in a way in which we don't compromise the other elements. So weight, for example, our 9.8 complete bike still weighs in at sub UCI weight limit at around 14.5 pounds. So whilst you get the aerodynamic benefit, you're not getting any of the compromise which you're generally there with an Aero road bike. Also, handling-wise, our geometry has been very carefully considered to mean that you get a great handling bike that's comfortable in long distances, but you also still get that you don't compromise any of that aerodynamic advantage. Yeah.
Now, for the high-end roadie who's not looking for the Aero bike, is the SLR. Tell us about this and really the kind of rider that you're targeting here.
Okay, yeah, well, the SLR is designed for that kind of rider who's looking for a bike which is as light as possible, but without any compromising strength or stiffness. We have no rider weight limits on any of our bikes. All bikes come with a frame which has a raw frame weight of around 895 grams for the medium to large size. So yeah, so it's the kind of rider who's looking for a build which is very, very light. I mean, our SLR 9.8, for example, weighs in at around about 6.1 kilos. So again, super light. But no compromising stiffness and strength. The kind of rider who's out all day, he's climbing, he's out there, and I mean, I must admit, I'm out here in Park City at the moment, and I must admit, we climbed up to, must have been about 9,500 feet, and I'll be honest, I was glad that I had the SLR underneath me. Yeah, I must admit, it's like kind of the kind of rider who's out all day, he wants to be a bike that's as light as possible, handles really, really well, he's climbing a lot, he's descending, just an all-round kind of bike to ride on. You can race on it, sportif on it, it's a very versatile one.
Now you're really breaking into the North American market now. What about price points on the products that we've discussed? Is that something that's been set, or is that something that you're still developing?
We're trying to give the North American consumer as much product and spec as possible for the price point. So our SLR range, for example, starts at $2,700 For that, you get our SLR frame platform. And again, as I said, it's sub 900 gram raw frame weight. And you get Shimano 105 kit on it and Mavic Axiom wheel set. So it's a great kind of no compromise, entry level, super light bike. The air range starts at $3,200. For that, you get exactly the same frame as the Brownies won the Olympics on. So you get a truly aerodynamic racing bike with Shimano Ultegra gearing, FSA chain set, and a Mavic wheel set again. So again, it's a great entry to our range and gives you a an aero road bike with all the benefits at a good price point.
Now, considering that, you have to ask, what about the materials? What about the carbon that you're using? Do you go to a lower level carbon as you go down in price point? Let's talk about those materials you're using.
Okay, well, on our elite range, we don't go any lower than T800 carbon. So we use a Toray T800 carbon. So we use a very high grade of carbon across the whole range. The only time it differs is on our 9.8 level product, where we use a little bit of the higher modulus carbon on the chainstay and the BB area.
So you're giving, I mean, at a really nice mid-level price, you're giving a very high level of materials in the frames.
Yeah, I mean, the Boardman name is on the frame itself. So the last thing you want to do is compromise the bit, which is the core to the bike. It's the heart of the bike. It's the bit we see the consumer buying into. And therefore, we see the consumer maybe upgrading around the frame itself. That's the part which is the heart of the bike and the bit we feel is, well, it's the bit, if I was buying a bike, it's the first bit I'd be looking at is what's the frame? How long I want to keep the frame for five years or more, and I'm going to be upgrading around it, but I want to make sure that frame is as good as it can possibly be. So, yeah, we put as much into that as possible.
Now, we were talking earlier that you're really building out your dealer base right now. So if folks can't find your bikes in their local dealer and they want to get more information, where can they go?
The best place to go first off is go to our website, and then they can be then redirected to our North American sales director, Fletch Newland, who can then point them in the right direction. Is www.boardmanbikes.com.
There you go, boardmanbikes.com. Folks, thank you so much for taking me through the line. It's clear that Chris has really given a lot of thought to this and that these are innovative designs on some really, really nice bikes. Thanks so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you very much.
You know, at heart, when I started the Fredcast, it was because I'm a bike nerd. I'm a total bike geek. And I got to tell you, this definitely scratched that itch. I was really impressed with what Chris and the rest of the team have put together. So thanks to them for that interview. Really enjoyed taking a look at their line. Well, next up is a company that I had the great opportunity of also interviewing at Press Camp, and it's a company whose apparel I have worn before and have found to be some of the most comfortable cycling apparel that I've had the opportunity to own and wear. And again, cycling apparel that I've paid out of my own pocket for, so it's always good to get that kind of a recommendation. And we're talking about Capo Cycling, C-A-P-O, Capo Cycling Apparel. Met them at Press Camp this year, had an opportunity to talk to them just a little bit about their line, because there's so many layers, again, to their line as well. We could really only scratch the surface. But here is my interview from Press Camp earlier this summer with Capo Cycling.
There's a lot of changes in cycling apparel these days, and I'm standing in the suite of, well, what seems to me to be an innovator in cycling apparel. I'm talking to Gary. He's from Capo. Gary, tell me a little bit of the history of Capo before we talk about some of the innovations and really what makes Capo stand out.
Thank you very much, David. Capo Cycling Apparel came to market 7 years ago, heavily influenced on Italian design themes and Italian technology. We really wanted products to work together, not to be a standalone product, but provide a solution that impacts a cyclist in a positive way, that is fashion forward, that is durable, that gives the end user a great value in apparel, and it makes them look unique.
What was the genesis of the brand? I know that there were really two of you who started the company. What made you decide to get into cycling apparel?
Rob Carbone's my business partner, longtime friend for over 20 years. And you know, we had been riding a long time together, and we saw some gaps in the marketplace in the products that we were using. And we were both, 10 plus years into the technology arena, and we were looking to go out on our own and start a business. And we really saw this void within the industry at that time on the apparel side. went and did about 9 months worth of research and talking to a lot of dealers in Northern California and some nationwide on some of the thoughts that we were having about building a cycling apparel company. And based on our philosophy and what the products we were going to build, that technology always trumps price, and that we want to impact the cyclists in a positive way, and that you really wanted to blend the kind of fashion side of cycling with the technical side that impact the rider in a positive way and to make you look unique. That's really how we developed the brand and what the brand stands for.
So I'm hearing technology, fashion, function. Tell me how those work together and what you did to make sure and what you continue to do to make sure that you're giving the cyclist comfort, good technology, and something that's going to work for them, whether they're riding their bike to commute or they're doing a double century.
Absolutely. And that's what gets Rob and I up in the mornings is, you know, I'm blending these three types of groups together to have the best possible product. And I think for a consumer, when you walk into a retail environment, the first thing, it's got to catch your eye. It's got to look European. It's got to ooze Italian. And that's one of the hardest things for Rob and I to do is the design side, the graphical side, and taking those graphics that they get people excited to ride their bike, and you take that graphical sense and get it on to a garment, and get it onto a garment that's going to last for at least two seasons, and that's going to support somebody whether they're doing a 10 mile mountain bike ride for 2,600 feet, or if they're going to go out and do a double century and spend 12 hours in a saddle, where you have fabrics that have SPF 50 built into them, antimicrobial, anti-odor, that have cold black technology that's going to reduce the ambient temperature of the rider by 20%, that is going to help them use less energy over that 12-hour period, or chamois that we call the 6-hour chamois, the anatomic 4G, you know, carbon. You know, it's really riders now in the U.S. that we see, they want to look unique, but they want the product to last, and it needs to impact them. It needs to help them with their event or what they're doing, and that's what we try to do at Coppa Cycling Apparel.
Now, you mentioned you want it to look Italian. You want it to ooze that sort of roady look, if you're talking about road apparel. You're making a lot of your product in Italy. You're sourcing from Europe. Let's talk about your supply chain and your manufacturing.
Absolutely. You know, Rob and I are both Italian Americans. We grew up in Italian households, so there's a lot of unique philosophies and values, you know, in growing up. My family's from Northern Italy. Rob's is from Southern Italy. I'm able to see my family at least once a year over there, so it's still important. You know, I get to interact with them. And, you know, Rob and I feel that the birthplace of cycling was Italy. The technology is there. The expertise is there. You know, just it's that whole look and feel that you can almost tell of a designer or a product is from Italy, just on the way, the appearance of it. And it goes back to, you know, there's so much technology available over there, whether it's zippers, grippers, textiles, fabrics, lycras, that's available over there. And there still is a ton of manufacturing. And we feel that if we could build 100% of our products there, we would. You know, based on some economic situations that are going on over there and capacity, we've had to move some stuff around. But 90% of our products are built in Italy. And the reason being that the raw materials are there and they're some of the best in the world, and the manufacturing expertise is there. Rob and I, being Italian Americans, it was important to us to have our garments built there. And I think, you know, the people tend to look at these things nowadays where 90% is built in Italy, and we're also doing manufacturing in the U.S. You know, and we're an Italian-American company. There's no doubt about it.
And so that really translates into the style of the garment, and also something we talked about earlier, the safety of the garment. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's more and more people obviously on the roads, on bicycles, whether it's a newer rider or a very seasoned person that's been riding a bike for 30 years. There's more people in the U.S., and we're having to share the roads more and more. In some parts of the country, it's better than others with the bike lanes. But if there's a way that we can make the cyclist more visible, maybe to reduce these interactions with cars on both sides, we're going to do that. You know, i.e. the Flow Yellow kits that we're doing. So they're very high visible kits that still look good. You don't lose the technology. All the way to our brand new Padrone High Vis, which this is a game changer for people that commute or that ride at night, where you have a fabric that looks normal, our super black fabric that looks black during the day, but as soon as light hits it, it illuminates. Where you have a bib short that's built with some of this technology, or short sleeve jersey, a vest, and a jacket. You know, these are products, when you see images of this in the morning or at night, that the rider is completely illuminated within the riding position, and it's going to give that visibility that the car is going to say, "Hold, what am I coming up on? I need to slow down and pay attention to what this is." So again, if we can make the riders safety at the forefront of it, we're going to try to do that. And that's what we've done with the Padrone Hi-Viz.
Now, not only do you have the safety, but you also have the performance. And I think when a lot of people think of Capo, and frankly, before I walked through the door today, when I thought of Capo, I thought of the ultimate high-end, very expensive brand. And certainly you've got those very high-end garments. But at the same time, you've really got quite the wide range. So you can fit the budgets, if you will, of a lot of cyclists now, can't you?
Yep, we want to appeal to every type of cyclist, every way, shape, and form, and everything. It's really allowed us to expand the product offering and some of the dealers that we work with nationwide and globally. We're shipping to 9 different countries in the world now. So there's a huge requirement on the types of riders and the types of garments that we need to produce. So we've broken this up into 3 categories. You have our Corsa series, which is our entry-level product, which is comfort and quality. Then you have our Super Corsa series, which is our Italian-influenced designs, more race inspired cuts, some different leg lengths and arm lengths on those, to our super high end, our GS Capo ATS Advanced Technology Systems, which are our highest level of products with a ton of technology built into it, such as the high gauge compression Lycra, such as the cold black technology that's going to reduce the ambient temperature of the garment and the rider by 20%, and also the SPF 50. Everybody's talking about, obviously, skin cancer and the amount of miles or the time that we're out in the sun. So these garments are going to give more protection to the riders. But we offer a huge myriad of garments and price points where you can take our entry-level jersey at $70, which is our Riga jersey, all the way up to the Drago jersey at $250, or our entry-level Riga short at $80, all the way up to the Drago short at $300, where you still are getting Italian and Swiss textiles, mostly either built in Italy, Eastern Europe, or in the U.S.
And something you mentioned earlier, designed to work together as a system.
Absolutely. If you look at our garments, depending on where you're riding, your geographic location, you can have huge weather changes. Northern California, we could leave in the morning and it can be, you're going to be in the high 30s when you're commuting to work. So you need a garment that's going to work in that temperature change. But when you leave at 4:30 or 5 or 6 o'clock at night, it could be in the mid 50s. You're not going to be able to wear a thermal jacket home and thermal bib tights. You're going to overheat. So you want to have that flexibility where you're pulling on and off garments, where we offer a lighter weight Leggero jacket in the GS13 and winter bib shorts, where you can put different accessories on. You can use different level base layers or different weight base layers. I can have a knee warmer, a leg warmer, and I'd be able to peel those off to ride home. So it's not about an individual product. It's about a system or a solution that can impact the rider in a positive way, depending on what climate and where they're riding.
Now, besides the range of prices that I told you surprised me earlier, the other thing that surprised me was the high percentage of custom that you're doing. Let's speak to that.
Absolutely. The custom market is blowing up in the U.S. And I think the riders are finally starting to see that, hey, I can get customized products for the company that I work at, for the 10 guys and girls that we ride with, that there's a lot of riders that they want to look unique. They don't want to wear something off the shelf. And this is a huge European influence that, it's definitely gathered steam over the last 10 years in the U.S. Our business is 50-50 custom and inline. We do a lot of it with our retail partners where, you might have your local dealer that has, their custom shop jersey. We take it to the next level where they're doing jerseys, they're doing arm warmers, they're doing bib shorts, they're doing socks, they're doing cycling caps. So that shop might have their own team or club, or they might just sell it at a retail level for their customers that want something that's unique and is unique to that shop, because that's where they go. And there's a loyalty to that shop. So the custom apparel, there's many different vendors that are doing it. Again, we focus on those 3 buckets that we just talked about, of verticals, Corsa, Super Corsa, and GS Capo. So any product that you see within our inline collection, we can develop on a custom level for you also.
Yeah. Now, you're talking about making jerseys for your local dealer. And obviously, if you want to get more information about Capo, you want to see Capo, you can certainly go to your local dealer. But if they don't want to go to their local dealer and they want to get some more information at home, where can they go?
CapoCycling.com. That's our technical website. That'll have all the information of our inline collections, price points, and also a full offering of our custom cycling apparel.
That's excellent. Gary, thank you so much for your time today and for talking to us briefly about Capo cycling apparel.
Thank you very much, Dave. Have a great afternoon.
So there you go, my interview from 2013 Press Camp with Capo Cycling Apparel. Go ahead and check them out as well. Well, Press Camp is one of my favorite events every year, and unfortunately this year I was really only able to be there for a few hours. I told you it's been a busy summer, both personally and professionally as well.
And one of the companies that was at press camp this year is Fezzari Bicycles, F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I Bicycles. And there was no need for me to stop by their suite because I've been riding a Fezzari 4A CR5 for a number of months and have just been, well, totally impressed by the quality of the bicycle and, well, quite frankly, the price of the bicycle as well. Let me tell you a little bit about the 4A CR5. The CR5 is an all-carbon monocoque frame with a Fezzari Racing Design carbon front fork. Now, the bike comes with Shimano Dura-Ace 9000, as well as FSA cranks and chain rings and bottom bracket, an FSA K-Force carbon handlebar, as well as an FSA K-Force carbon fiber seat post. Plus, the bike also comes equipped with Reynolds Assault carbon clincher wheels. Now, that sounds like a pretty expensive bike, right? No, you're talking about a bike that goes to you direct from the manufacturer at a price of $4,599. No, there's nothing wrong with my recording. $4,599. I would say that from almost any other manufacturer, you are talking about a bike that is going to retail to you for between $7,500 and maybe $10,000 or $11,000. And this is no open mold, carbon copy, if you'll excuse the pun, road bike. This is a bike that is designed specifically to Fezzari's specifications, built under the quality control of Fezzari, shipped directly to Fezzari right here in Utah. And then when you order the bike, they build it specifically to your custom specifications so that when it comes to you out of the box, it fits you. You don't need to go to your local bike shop and get a $200, $300, $400, $500 custom fitting because the bike is coming to you custom fit. Now, I've been riding this bike since about May. And I have to tell you, it has taken my cycling up another notch. Now listen, I was riding a Colnago before, okay? So it's not like I was riding some sloucher bike, but I am a better, more capable cyclist thanks to my Fezzari 4A CR5. I see it in the climbs, I see it in the sprints, I see it when I'm on long rides up to 100 miles and more. Now, maybe you're not looking for a Dura-Ace level bike and you're looking for something a little bit less expensive. Fezzari makes a wide range of road and mountain bikes to fit everyone's budget. If you are thinking about buying a new bike, do yourself a favor before you do anything else. Make sure you check out Fezzari. You can find Fezzari online at Fezzari.com. That's F as in Frank, E as in Edward, double Z as in zebra, A-R-I.com. Make sure you check them out. You'll be glad that you did. And if you do, make sure you let them know that you heard about it right here on the Fredcast. Well, one of the companies that was returning to press camp this year that we also spoke with last year is Cali Protectives. I was really impressed with them last year and wanted to stop by their suite again this year to learn what was new from Cali because I was so impressed with what they were doing in the past. So here is my interview from the 2013 press camp with Cali Protectives.
Last year at press camp, we were introduced to Cali Protectives, and we talked to Brad. Brad is, by trade, an engineer. And now, when I say you're an engineer, I mean, you've worked on some pretty high-end stuff. Tell us where you really cut your teeth in engineering.
I got to work for a company called Northrop Grumman. The first airplane I worked on was the B-2 stealth bomber. Got to crawl through it, the final assembly, and see what that was all built about. From there, I moved on to some other airplanes. I worked on something called the Joint Strike Fighter, F-18s, and a few others that never made it to the air.
Brad and I were geeking out on sailboats before. We're going to geek out on airplanes. But before we do that, what really got you interested in helmets? And specifically, I know that your first helmets were not bicycle helmets. What really got you into helmets?
Well, I was a cyclist. While I was working in aerospace, I was a cyclist and, got lucky. Like any other engineer who rides a bike, you get an opportunity to work for a bike company, you jumped on it. So I got a job at Specialized and started working there initially. Eventually, I moved on to working on bike frames. I worked on things like the carbon Robay and the carbon tarmac and bikes like that. But I moved on from there and got the opportunity to start a carbon fiber factory in China. So we started building helmet shells for other companies, for other factories. And we're taking a look at the test results, and we really didn't like what we're seeing. With a motorcycle helmet, you see this initial spike, this spike in G-forces. And then as the shell breaks down, you see this G-forces fall, you hit the foam and they spike back up. So you're having this double spike. So think what's happening inside your skull. Your brain is floating around, going back and forth. You can have as bad of injury on the opposite side of the impact as the side you got hit on. My favorite example is that hockey player that slips and hits his head, and he ends up in the back of his head. He gets two black eyes in the front. Well, that's from his brain slapping forward. We wanted to slow that down. We wanted to figure out a way to keep that double spike from happening. So we looked at bicycle helmets and how they're in-molded. And why wasn't motorcycle helmets in-molded? So we took that on, and we tried to in-mold a motorcycle helmet. That little question took us 3 years.
Now, define, because we talked about this last year, but I want to remind everybody as we move forward into 2013 and beyond, I want to remind everybody what that means in molding. Realizing it's audio, try to describe for everybody what that looks like.
I think I can do that pretty simply. Normally, you know, when you construct a helmet on the motorcycle side, and in many years ago on a bicycle side, you made your shell and you made your foam and you stuck them together. You glued them, Velcroed them, taped them. You know, even some of the cheapest helmets are still taped together now. And we all remember that our shells came off of our bicycle helmets. And even on some of our motorcycle helmets, you could see that the foam would come loose. What we do, very similar to a bicycle helmet, is we take that motorcycle shell helmet, we put it inside the mold, and we inject the foam in place. So now that is a bond between the two. They it's injected to fill every gap there is. Gaps are bad. You got that air gap between, and that's where that foam that I talked about, that shell has to break down before it gets to the part that saves your head, which is the foam. We want that to happen more immediately. We find that because we've made that happen right up against it, we can thin the shell out, because the foam's right there to back it up now. It's not a separate entity. Now they're both together. We can thin the shell out. We can lower the density of the foam. We start to dissipate the energy faster. We're talking milliseconds. It's an extremely short period of time, but it makes a difference. So now your helmet starts to crush quickly.
And what we saw last year was the Maraca helmet. And there have been some additional changes in that helmet and some new things. And you've got a great example of the number of pieces that are in that helmet. Earlier, you were describing to me the complexity of building it and the number that are built every single day. Give everybody an idea of the technology that goes into that helmet.
We threw a lot of things at that helmet. We were trying to look to make that the best helmet we knew how to make. And the Maraca helmet is, we have a road version and a cross-country version. And what we have is we have the geometric shapes inside in the shape of cones. The idea of that is kind of like crumple zones. So when it crushes, the energy spreads laterally, not just linearly. Okay, so now that energy that would have gone straight to your head gets directed to the side. So we have the cone head technology in there. Additionally, the problem with the issue with helmets with lots of big vents in it is you only have a small area to put a lot of foam in. Well, that's high density foam. We don't believe in that. We want a light density foam. So what we've done is we've added these reinforcements around the vents. What that's for is when it hits those reinforcements, it spreads the load over a greater area of foam. Using more foam allows us to lower the density of the foam. So now we can use a foam density that's not going to crack your head.
So by going to a lower density foam, you're going to something that's able to spread the impact out more. You've got the reinforcements around the vents, and you've got these cone head technologies, as you called it, to spread it out laterally. What other innovations are in that helmet?
There's something that we've been working on for a while. It's a viscoelastomeric foam. And our initial reason for looking at this was to help with low G impacts. And we're still looking at that very closely.
Define a low G impact. In what case would a cyclist have a low G impact?
Well, it's, you know, you might have fallen over, if you will.
Couldn't get out of your pedals, maybe.
Yeah, that's a great example. Where it's not a high speed impact, but, you know, you you, maybe you got your arm down first and you still hit, but you can still experience 100 G's, 150 G's. When your helmet is built really hard and the foam is too stiff, it doesn't start kicking in and it doesn't start dissipating the energy till, you know, 150 or more G's. So you might be taking care of those high impacts, but you also can get that concussion down below that. So we started looking at it for the reasons of taking care of some of those lower G's. We still are studying that. It's very important. I'm really obsessed with this low G thing right now because I think it's an important part of helmets that has been ignored. What we found, however, when we use this is it's a softer foam, and that foam, it's more comfortable. So what we have found by using, we call it bumper fit, is it helps with that low G impact. But additionally, we find very few people that don't find this helmet to be very comfortable. It takes those hot spots out. You know, if you have a spot on a helmet, you know, and you know what they are. Oh, my head hurts when I hit this on most helmets. Well, we've taken those hot spots out.
Now, because of all the technology, how many can you make an hour a day?
We can make two in about 45 minutes. And I always question, well, what do you care? I mean, what does the consumer care? What does that mean to the consumer? And at the end of the day, it shouldn't matter to you how long it takes us to make that. But I will tell you the importance to us is that we're willing to push the technology to find out, to go to the next level. If you don't take that first step and make that helmet that's really hard to make, or make anything that's really hard to make, you don't take that chance. You don't take the time to go figure it out. Since then, we've been able to work on things to help us get those numbers down and redesigned other helmets that are coming out with similar technologies that we can bring those price points down.
One of the things before we move to those other helmets, because I do want to talk about that, two questions. Number one, when you say that you can only make a couple every few, you know, every hour, most people would think that means that the retail price must be pretty darn high. What are we talking about in the way of a retail price for the Morocco?
We're at $189. It's not crazy high, but
for the level of technology that's in it and for the sort of handmade care that you put into it, I think that that's more than reasonable. But the other thing that I wanted to focus on, and just because it's cool to me, are the vents, the shape of the vents. You told me a cool story about that. They may look familiar to some people. Why?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I worked on the F-18, and the first version of the F-18 was the AB. Those were trainer tested planes. The CD was the plane that was mostly used in production. Well, I worked on the EF version, which is the difference is the CD version was mostly aluminum. We were making that aircraft into a mostly carbon fiber aircraft. And if you look at the intake vents of the F-18 C&D, they look like a D shape. They're oval on one side with a line on the other. Well, we found during development and testing, we could ram more air into a more longer square shape. And so when we sat down to design this helmet, I sat down with the industrial designers and said, I want to make a vent that looks more like that shape. Hopefully it'll ram more air through.
It's an aggressive shape, and it's an attractive helmet. I called it sexy earlier, so you know, I just thought it was neat. Now, that's not your only that's available in a mountain version. It's also available in a road version, but you've also got some new road helmets as well. Tell us about the Phenom.
Yeah, the Phenom has several similar technologies. It has what we call the bumper fit in it. It has the super vents in it to help spread the load. It has the geometric shapes inside. So it's still meant to dissipate the energy more aggressively, lower the density of the foam. We believe soft foam is better for you and better next to your head. And because we've simplified how we make it, we can make more of them. We can bring the price down to $149 price point. We did leave the carbon fiber piece out of it. I mean, even though I'm a carbon fiber engineer and it's my passion and love, we said, okay, maybe that helmet doesn't need to have that carbon fiber piece in there.
Sure. And then a little bit lower down the line, you've got another road helmet as well.
We do. It's called the Loka. It has the geometric shapes inside, so the cones to help dissipate the energy. It does not have all of the vent reinforcements, and that's because as it goes further down the line, it has more foam in it anyway, so we can take some technology out to bring the price point down.
I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curve, something we didn't talk about before, but something I've been thinking about as we've been sitting here talking for the last half hour, 45 minutes, and that is, you know, there's a lot of helmet companies out there. There's a lot of protective headwear firms.
Absolutely.
What is it that brings a consumer to Cali? Why is it that you find that your dealers are sold out? Why are people coming to your company over someone else?
Wow. Great question. I hope it's because they see the passion in what we do and that, you know, at the end of the day, we really care about what we're doing. And it's not that the other companies don't, they do. You know, we come from a development background, an R&D background. We want to try new things. We want to push things. And it's not that others don't, but I think we have the capability. We're small enough, nimble enough. We own, you know, our processes so that we can make the changes necessary to, you know, try new things.
There was something you said earlier that struck me as a dad myself, something that you said that struck me, and you said it several times. You said, and maybe I'll let you say it, but it was about your kids and about your helmets. You said, let's see if you remember.
Yeah, I won't put any helmet out on the market that I won't let my kids wear.
And I think that for those of you who are parents, or just for those of you who just understand, you know, what I just saw in his eyes when he said that, I think that it's really critical, is that you're talking about somebody who is passionate about safety, and if it's something that they won't put their kids in, maybe it's something you don't want to put your head in. So thank you for telling us more about Cali. Again, let everybody know where they can get more information.
www.caliprotectives.com.
Excellent. Thanks again. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy. You know, I realized that interview took place, well, weeks ago, but I'm still struck by the look he had in his eyes when I asked him about his kids and also about what draws people to Cali. So I'd encourage you to check it out, caliprotectives.com. Really an interesting story, an interesting guy, and I think that they've got some really interesting designs and ideas about protecting your noggin. Next up, I had the opportunity to stop by the suite for Rotor Bike Components. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Rotor. I had the opportunity to interview them as part of my Interbike TV gig a couple of years ago and was struck by their value proposition as well as the number of professional cyclists who are using Rotor components to win races. And that's one of the reasons why, in the limited amount of time that I had at this year's press camp, I chose to spend some of that time with Rotor. I think that you will find this very interesting. Here's my interview with Rotor Bike Components. Every year at press camp, we see a lot of new innovations, and an innovation which has been around for perhaps hundreds of years, but really is coming into the forefront of technology in bicycles right now, is a non-round chainring. I'm talking to Phil from Rotor. Phil, explain the benefits of using a Q-ring.
The main benefit of using a Q-ring is that your bicycle's drivetrain works for you. And the very clear benefit of that is increased performance, comfort, and more enjoyment of the ride.
I like it when you say enjoy the ride. That's something I say on the show all the time. When we talk about putting on a set of Q-rings, what's the first thing that a rider is going to notice when they start using your product?
Well, when they're going uphill, they're going to notice they're much more on top of the gears, that they're spinning a lot more smoothly, that they feel like a much more capable cyclist. When they're on the flats, if they're riding at a very high cadence, it might take them a little while to get used to the feeling of the non-circular ring. Again, that's because the drivetrain is working for your legs and you're used to fighting against a round chainring.
Now, what is it about the Q-ring that gives the rider that feeling when they're going up the hill?
We are varying the resistance in the drivetrain according to what your leg can and cannot do. This design is a design defined by science and by biomechanics. We looked at what the legs can and cannot do, and then we changed the resistance in the drivetrain to be in line with that, yet still work perfectly with derailleurs.
So while all of us have been going around in circles with our legs for years, you're saying our legs really aren't made to do that.
There is nobody who can deliver the same power in the up and down stroke as they do over the top and the bottom. We only have two legs. We're a two-cylinder engine. If you want to be able to deliver a constant circular power, you'd need four legs or more. Obviously, we don't have that. which means that there's no logic in having linear resistance in the drivetrain because we can't deliver linear power. Therefore, in our perspective, the only logical way to have a drivetrain is to have varying resistance in line with what you can and can't do.
Now, how does rotor do that? Because one of the things that we were talking about earlier is the fact that not only is it non-round, but there's some adjustability in here as well. How does that work?
Not every cyclist reaches his maximum power at the same angle. That's down to a whole list of factors. The way the cyclist pedals, but it's also your bike geometry, your saddle position, the length of your leg. There's so many issues that influence it. So we found out very early that the product need to be adaptable to each individual cyclist. So we came up with a system that allows us to change the angle of the crank in regards to the chainring, so that if you arrive at maximum power later, you can spin the crank further. If you arrive earlier, you lift the crank back up. And it's a very simple process. You'd think it's complicated. It's quite simple to find what's the right position for me, and it's very easy to know if you're in the right or the wrong position.
Now, that probably begs a question in a lot of people's minds. Okay, but I've got FSA cranks, I've got Dura-Ace or Altegra. How will I get this product on my bike? Will it fit my bike?
Yes, it does. As a company philosophy, we don't believe in exclusiveness. We don't believe in preventing people combining our products with other products. So we intentionally design our chainrings to work with most all cranks on the market. There's one or two exceptions simply because we don't have the capacity to make everything. But as a general guideline, you can put our rings on your crank and get the full performance benefit of the non-circular chainring on the bike you have now.
You had a little rhyme for that. I'm sorry. You're going to have to say it on the microphone.
Okay. Well, that was for our crank sets.
Right. Well, let's talk about your crank sets before we do that. So you've got the rings, but really you've got components of a system. But I say components for a reason, because you were explaining that earlier.
Yeah, we have a philosophy that we believe that the customer should be able to choose the exact setup that he wants. Lots of brands will sell a crank with only one set of rings. If the customer wants a different set of rings, then he's going to have to buy that additionally. So our philosophy is let the customer choose exactly what they want. So if you want a 110, 172 road double crank with a 5236, you can have that. If you want 5238, you can have that as well. It allows you to pick and choose the exact solution for your needs. So that philosophy also was the driving reason behind our crank collection. We have a whole range of cranks, and they all fall within what we call the UBB concept. The UBB concept is the universal BB. It's very simple. This crank will fit your bike. There's one exception. There's a rhyme for it, and unfortunately, not all of our cranks fit all bikes, because it's the crank you want on the bike you own unless you ride a Trek Madone. Now, what does that mean? That means that the Trek BB system does not allow for our 30 millimeter cranksets to be installed on that bicycle. You can install our 24 millimeter axle cranksets. So there is a rotor solution if you want a rotor crank on that bike. However, with almost any other bicycle on the market, of any other bottom bracket system from any other brand, you can choose either our 30 millimeter or our 24. And let me go through the list so that people are following us.
Absolutely.
BSA, BB86, BB30, BB Riot, any system, frankly, the consumer can choose, I want a 24 or I want a 30 millimeter axle on this bike. Again, the rhyme, it's the crank you want on the bike you own.
Now, and thank you for that, because that's important that people understand that you've got the complete system and that it will fit their bike. I know that in Europe, Q-rings have really caught fire. They've really become extremely popular. Here in the United States, and perhaps not as much marketing here in the United States, people don't know about it. But you've got an innovative program that's starting in a few weeks that will give people the opportunity to try Q-rings. How will that work?
Yeah. So we've come up with a test program for Q-rings. We're going to be sending key dealers throughout the continent an anodized red set of chainrings. They'll have 130 BCD, they'll have 110 BCD, they'll have mountain bike chainrings as well. What that'll allow consumers to do is go past your local shop, the guys you know and trust, they'll have a set of chainrings. You can install those chainrings on your bike And that's where you're really going to feel the difference between a round ring and a Q ring. You're on a completely familiar platform, and that's where you'll see, well, hey, I'm on the mountain bike, and I just covered that technical climb that I've never been able to hit. How did that happen? Or I'm on my road bike, and I'm hammering up this 15% grade. I always suffer like a pig on this thing. I'm still suffering. Maybe not like a pig, but I can still suffer. But what I'm seeing is lower heart rate and a slightly better time on this climb. But it's my normal bike.
Yeah, so it really gives you that apples to apples comparison. What will people feel when they first get on the bike? Is it, for want of a better term, is it a bit disconcerting to them? Does it feel strange?
What we see is about half of the cyclists hop on their bike and they're like, oh, hey, this is cool. Then the other half will hop on their bike and they'll have a period of adaptation where they're going to have to concentrate on unlearning the battle against a round chainring. So again, the system's working for your legs. It's going to be a slightly different pedaling feeling, but everybody can and everybody will adapt to this. What they're going to feel when they're on the bike, certainly as they head into their first climb, is that they're going to be smoother, more on top of the gears, less fatigue. They'll notice they can stay on the standing up for longer as they climb, and that's all indicative of the increased performance of a Q-ring.
Now, that's all subjective. Yes. Let's talk about objective data, because you mentioned before the science yes. behind the product. What kinds of performance benefits do people see objectively, according to the data, when they use Q-rings?
Well, we did a recent study, which was a 1 kilometer high exertion. We called it a mini time trial situation. That's relevant because during riding, you quite often have short periods of high exertion, be it a climb, be it when the peloton breaks into a sprint. It's something that happens quite a lot. And what we saw conclusively in this study is that, without exception, all cyclists improved their performance riding Q-rings. We did 6 tests during this study. The first and the last test were always done on round rings. The 4 tests in the middle were done all on Q-rings. And the data is very clear. Riders are faster and they generate more power throughout this 1 kilometer with Q-rings without exception. The difference in times that we saw is an average of about 85 and a half seconds down to just below 84 seconds. That's not going to put you a football field ahead, but it is going to keep you up with your buddies. It's going to help you get ahead a little more. As far as wattage goes, we saw averages of around 430 watts with round rings, boost up to almost 450 watts with the Q-rings. And again, this worked with all the cyclists, and most interestingly, with the cyclists who, after doing the test, told us, nah, that's not going to work for me. You'll see, just it doesn't work. I don't like these.
So again, back to that subjective versus objective. From a subjective standpoint, they said this didn't work. We showed them the data, and they said, oh, maybe it did.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. It's a question of, we're offering something that is hard to believe. We realize that. What we're doing here is we're changing cycling's culture from the paradigm shift from the only thing that works is a round ring to the new paradigm. Actually, the only thing that really works is a non-circular chain ring.
I asked you earlier, and I want to ask you again about, because you said it helps every cyclist. You found that in your tests. But is this product for every cyclist? Who's your target market here?
Really, our target market is anybody who owns a bicycle with pedals on it. And it will work for everybody. There are performance benefits, and that works for the racer crowd. There's comfort benefits. That works for almost everybody. There's endurance benefits. That certainly works for everybody. There's knee strain benefits. People say you love riding, but you can't do the mileage you used to do in the past because your knees are playing up. We find the majority of people who switch to Q-rings can find their joy again in cycling. They're not suffering as they did with their knees.
Nice. Okay, so if people want more information, certainly on Q-rings themselves, on the entire Rotor product line, and also on your demo program, yep. Where can they get more information?
We'll be publishing more information on rotorbike.com. You'll also see snippets in the press coming up, and you can always come to our website for the information you need.
Excellent, Phil. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to giving them a try.
And thank you very much. I'm hoping you'll enjoy them.
Well, I haven't yet had the opportunity to try Q-rings on my bike, but I am looking forward to the opportunity of doing so. If any of you out there are using Rotor, would love to hear your comments. Please send us an email, or even more preferably, send us a voicemail so that we can feature your comments on the show for the benefit of the other Fredcast listeners. Would really appreciate that. Well, on the next episode of the Fredcast, I'll have one more interview from this year's edition of Press Camp in Deer Valley, Utah. But I have coming to you now an interview that I did at Dealer Camp. Now, I have no idea how I sound in this interview, considering I did it shortly after having my shoulder surgery. So hopefully I don't sound drugged up. But as I was walking around Dealer Camp, I came across a product that I'd heard about before, and I finally had a chance to see in person, and I was impressed by it, and I wanted to bring it to you. This is Sea Sucker Racks. I think it's a really innovative, unique product. And here is my interview with the folks from Sea Sucker. So we're walking around Dealer Camp, and there's this car with just bikes hanging off every angle, the side, the back, the top. And we're talking to Greg. Greg is from Sea Sucker. Now, it's sort of a strange name to talk about bikes hanging off of the side of a car. Explain to everybody what Sea Sucker is all about.
Sea Sucker is basically a vacuum mount company. We got our start in the marine market. That's the sea part of it. We made accessories for boats, cup holders, rod holders, and the like. And then in the last 4 years, we've been doing bike racks for cars. They attach with this super-powered vacuum mount, which means that you're not strapping, clamping, clipping onto the car, completely non-marking, and it allows you to attach a rack, you know, to virtually any car.
Now, of course, when I looked at it, the first thing I thought of was, you know, a jewel thief trying to stick something onto a piece of glass, cut the glass out. Do you get that a lot?
Oh, sure. People ask me if I can rob banks with this, and I always say the only thing stopping me is my lack of upper body strength. So.
He said, talking to me, standing here in a sling. So explain to everybody, is this a solution, a temporary solution for somebody maybe who's traveling, or is this a full-time rack mount system just for anybody who wants to mount a bike to their car?
It's both. Mm-hmm. We sell this rack specifically marketed to people who want to travel with their bikes, because our single bike model, what we call the Talon, is small enough to fit in your carry-on luggage. And because it's basically universal, when you get to the airport, wherever you're going, you take the rack out of your bag and stick it on whatever car they give you, mm-hmm. and then you're off to the races, literally and figuratively. But we're also marketing these racks for everyday use. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have a car or two cars or three cars at your disposal, one rack fits them all, and you know, use it when and how you like.
And I made a joke earlier about glass, but glass is not the only surface to which you can stick this, yeah?
Well, sure. It works on the metal, too. You can put it right on the roof. I actually attach mine to the trunk of my car at times. So basically, the surface you're going to attach to, it needs to be non-porous, relatively smooth and flat, and that's pretty much, you know, what cars are made of, relatively smooth, non-porous surfaces.
So perhaps for those maybe who aren't getting the visual on it, you've got it here on the back of sort of a hatchback crossover vehicle. What other areas do you see people putting these on?
The two most common places to put it are right up on the rooftop, right mm-hmm. behind the front windshield. That's a nice stable place on the roof to put it. You don't want to put it in the middle of the roof because, you know, there's not as much support under the sheet metal there. My favorite place to put it is on the back glass of a hatchback or an SUV. When you have it there, your bike is basically hanging off the back of the car. It's getting it out of the wind, and it's a whole lot easier just to lift your front forks up to, you know, the back windshield rather than lifting the whole bike up under the roof of the car.
Sure. So we're talking about a fork mount, but also, you've got a similar Sea Sucker system for the back wheel as well for stabilization?
Sure. The main power of the rack comes in the front platform where you're mounting your forks into it. But we also include with each rack what we call a rear wheel strap. Basically just keeps the back tire from going side to side when you have it on the roof. And we have upgrades to that. Will also hold your front wheel side by side with your back tire if you don't have room in your trunk or your back seat for the front wheel.
Ah, makes sense. What kind of price points are we talking about for a product like this?
Single bike rack, the Talon that we talked about before, retails $270. Our next most popular model is our two bike rack, what we call the Mini Bomber, retails $400.
And what about weight limits on the rack? Is it just for road bikes? Can we put a mountain bike on it? Can we use a tandem or a Mordem? What do you think?
Sure. I've had people use basically all kinds of bikes. We put a 45-pound weight limit on it, mm-hmm. So that's getting you some of your heavy-duty downhill bikes. We have some height adapters for for the tandems because it has such a long wheelbase. You just want to make sure that your chain ring's not getting too close to your paint job, so you got to lift up the front of the back wheel a little bit to make more space. But other than that, whatever bike you want to throw on.
Sounds great. Greg, if people want more information, where can they get it?
At www.seasucker.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. And that was Greg from Seasucker Racks. Again, you can check them out at seasucker.com. I hope you've enjoyed these interviews from earlier this summer at Press Camp and Dealer Camp. Again, more product information coming up in the next episode of the Fredcast shortly. But before we go, I do want to thank our show sponsors. Of course, as always, thank Jensen USA at jensenusa.com/thefredcast, where you will get a great selection of products at phenomenal prices with unparalleled customer service. And also, we want to thank Fizari at Fizari.com, where you are going to get a top-of-the-line bicycle, road bikes, mountain bikes with incredible performance, specifications, and technologies at some of the best prices you will find anywhere. Check them out at Fizari.com, F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I, and make sure you let them know you heard about it right here on the Fredcast. For show notes and links about anything that you hear right here on the Fredcast, please visit our website at www.thefredcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, if you would, for the latest information. That's facebook.com/thefredcast. Of course, you can always follow us on Twitter. That's twitter.com/fredcast. Or send an email. The email is thefredcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to send us an audio comment for use here on the show, you can use the little link on the right-hand side of the webpage that says send a voice message, or you can use our Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. And as we've been doing since the very beginning of the Fredcast, way back in episode number one, there's only one thing left to do, and that's to bring you this week's PodSafe Cycling Music, which was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by IndoorCyclingMusic.com, the home of the weekly featured track and premium members content of weekly 30 and 60 minute cardio mixes and monthly 90 minute cardio mixes to get the world and David moving. You can find more information at www.IndoorCyclingMusic.com. Now, this week's artist is Jill Scott. The track is called Brother. This is the Inferno Mix. And according to IndoorCyclingMusic.com, they love using this track in a spin class about halfway up a long climb because the words are just like that little voice inside you helping to push you along. So if you would, get ready, click play when you are right in the middle of that difficult climb and use Jill Scott's and IndoorCyclingMusic.com's music to get you to the top of the hill. That's it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. I'm back very shortly with another product-related episode, but between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
You wanna tear it down, but you can't touch we ain't invincible, but Lord knows we are beautiful and blessed.
Check the affirmative.
Oh yeah.
Don't let nobody hold you back. No, no, no.
Don't let nobody hold you, control your emotion.
But Lord.